Rudy Havenstein, senior market commentator. Welcome to The Competent Investor. How are you?
Great to be with you, Tom.
Thank you for joining me. It's been a little while since you and I have chatted, of course, on the previous show here, but I wanted to start by maybe getting an overview. You know, you and I are talking on the morning of Fed Day, of course, October 29th. What do you think matters most to the Fed right now for the decisions it's going to make? Kind of going into the end of the year here, and also really at the tail end, the last couple meetings of Powell's term.
Well, I think the main thing on their mind is that there's massive Fed deficits that have, I mean, massive government deficits that have to be financed. And so that clearly is overwhelming any concern over inflation. I mean, inflation, as far as I'm concerned, is out of control. It's been over their made up 2% target now going on 5 years in a few months. And they're talking about cutting rates, you know, and there's certainly no, you know, everyone's, you know, people on the TV, people say the Fed is restrictive. But if you look at some of the nutty investments going on right now, there are, you know, a lot of them are as crazy as anything that was going on in 2021 with the NFT and all that nonsense craze. So I don't know. I think that's, you know, Kevin Warsh has a great clip I posted of him where he talks about how the Fed, it was the Fed that got into politics during COVID because they, you know, and also before COVID, where they just, the Congress spent recklessly and didn't fund it. And then, you know, here comes the Fed to buy all their bonds, you know, and say, and keep rates low. And the message that they sent to Congress was, you know, you can spend as much as you want for as long as you want. And that's what they did. So I noticed that he's one of the five contenders for supposedly for the Fed spot. He would be the best. I mean, they got other people on there like Rick Rieder, you know, who's BlackRock's fixed income guy. Gee, you know, what do you think he wants to do, right? He probably wants negative rates. I think that's it. I think the Fed's mandate originally was inflation. I think they've completely failed on that. Look at any long-term chart of the inflation, even using their doctored model numbers, and they've been a massive failure on that. And apparently they're succeeding on the job front, if you believe that it's, you know, these FOMC academics that are responsible for jobs in America. And but they have another mandate. They got to make the Treasury look solvent. So that's probably their main concern.
Well, you know, so this idea of the BIS and let's say the numbers as we see them is something I did want to ask you about. You know, we saw the employment numbers come out, and then the head of, was it the BIS, I think, that was canned directly after that because he didn't, Trump didn't
the
like
BLS,
him.
Yeah.
BLS, yeah.
Yeah, the BIS is a whole nother can of worms. Yeah, BLS,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's the thing. Like, you know, I've had discussions before with, you know, shadow stats, data, ideas like this. And I don't get the sense that inflation, that people, the average person on the street actually believes that inflation number, other than maybe at the gas pump, because the oil price is still low enough,
right,
which makes me think that the world economy is actually a lot weaker as well than we might otherwise think it is.
Right. Yeah. No, nobody believes their cost of living is going up 3%. I don't. I mean, you know, I'll get the occasional kid living at home or, you know, hedge fund manager yell at me. But no, the vast majority of people. There was a Hilson Rath, who was like the previous Nick Timiraos, wrote an article in 2015. And this is when the official CPI was something like 0.2%, like under 1%. Mm-hmm. And the gist of his article in 2015 was, hey, America, what's wrong with you? Start spending, or something along those lines. And he got, and I saved him because, you know, everything gets scrubbed over time. But I post out there of the comments. I took a bunch of comments from Wall Street Journal registered subscribers. So these are not, you know, generally Mamdani fans or anything, you know what I mean? And they just were ripping Hilson Rath with their personal stories of how high the cost of living is. And this is in 2015 when the CPI was, you know, 0.2. And, you know, I got on Twitter in 2013. And so I had to not, you know, just on Twitter alone, I had to spend, you know, almost 10 years where every single day there'd be somebody on FinTwit or somebody on CNBC coming on, and generally they were very wealthy people, who said, we have no inflation, or we need higher inflation, or inflation, we haven't had inflation in 20 years, things like that. And I'm just looking at them like, how out of touch can you be to say something like that? I mean, I guess if you say it to Scott Wapner, it's, no big deal, but go to, I tell people, I want to get a business card that just says, go say that in a supermarket, and hand it to people when they say stupid things like, there's no inflation. Inflation's not a problem. Are you kidding me? Go talk to people for whom it's an existential threat. For me, it's an annoyance. I'm like, oh, geez, this was X and now it's 3X a few years later. But for a lot of people, it's a decision between food and rent and, and gas. Thank God gas is down. I mean, if gas was up now, we probably have 6 or 7%, official inflation, right? But I've actually one sector I'm kind of bullish on because everybody seems to hate it is the energy, the oil and gas area. But yeah, there's such a smug contempt for the average person on FinTwit and on CNBC and Bloomberg and the FT and WSJ, Wall Street Journal and all of them. And that bugs me because these are the people that are making the country great, not these guys that are, paper shuffling, trading billions of dollars in digitally every day. It's just the smug contempt that our elites have for the vast majority of the population just ticks me off. And so that's kind of been my thing. I pick on the Fed because I think a lot of people don't realize their role in this kleptocracy. And I'm kind of a Don Quixote. Yeah, I make fun of myself. I'm a, Don Quixote tilting at windmills, and I'm not naive and I'm not starry-eyed idealist, but I do think I've tried to make people more aware of the scam and how the wealth in this country under every administration has been funneled. The main goal has been, I said the other day, the main goal of monetary and tax policy this century seems to be to prevent billionaires from becoming centimillionaires, I really believe that. I don't think it's good for our country to have, Guatemalan levels of wealth disparity. And that a lot of people like that, and a lot of people don't like that I say that. So the people who blocked me on Twitter, it's like a total badge of honor. It's like it's largely a bunch of financial war criminals and chills so I'm quite proud of that. But I think I'm just rooting. I think it's very uncommon on FinTwit to kind of root for the little guy. Because I used to be kind of a little guy, I grew up little guy, and to see the just the Bill Ackmans of the world that are just so, they get bailed out. He got bailed out at that bank that failed. He got bailed out in 08, and he got bailed out in 2020. And they're billionaires, and they're always going to be fine. And for them to like mock, oh, we could have 4% inflation, no, that's not a problem. I mean, literally, they say this, and some went even higher. I had one hedge fund guy, very prominent, smart guy. I like the guy, but he blocked me. I think it was either because of my gun control views or because I'm a Second Amendment fan. But and he's from another country. But he telling me, we need like m many years of 6 or 7% inflation. And I mean, and other people I like say that, and I'm like, well, okay, so you're basically your solution is to just absolutely destroy what's left of the middle class in this country and the poor. To do what? To keep the Dow, at 47,000 or whatever? I mean, I don't understand that. I think it would be better if we had no inflation and the Dow was cut in half. But you can imagine that's considered hate speech on FinTwit. I don't think the stock market is the most important thing in the I don't think it should be our top priority. And I think that, this entire century, post Greenspan, it certainly seems to have been. And I think now everybody thinks Fed's got your back, right? And I have a few funny posts on that, but I mean, you're making a bet that the Fed's omnipotent. Maybe they are, maybe they are, maybe they're not.
Well, I mean, recent history, let's say since 2008, sure seems to reinforce that point, really. And I think that's what makes this time so much more dangerous is the narrowness of the stock market combined with the idea that it is infallible and that this or not this, but these bubbles just continue endlessly. What do you think their reasoning would be that to say that we need 6 to 7% inflation for years on end?
Well, I mean, you'll hear it. I mean, guys like Luke Roman say it, and I like Luke, and he's I'm not I'm like I said, I'm like Don Quixote. I mean, maybe he's right. You know, maybe that would be the ideal world for from a financial point of view, but because God help us, no one wants to cut spending or raise taxes, right? So if we're not going to take what would most, you know, old school would consider the responsible approach, it's quite easy. And again, these people who are saying this are generally quite wealthy people who are saying, let's inflate away the debt, you know. But you got a guy like Lacey Hunt, who's a deflationist, saying, you know, you can't, you massively harm a good chunk of the country when you do that. Now, you're going to, you know, if you cut benefits because you can't afford them, you know, they'll say, well, that's a massive harm too, which it is. But Greenspan had a great quote years ago in 1995 when he was testifying at Congress about Social Security. And he said, you know, I can guarantee you Social Security benefits as high, as much as you want, and as far as you want. He goes, but I cannot guarantee you their purchasing power. And so what is going to happen? Let's say there's somebody who has, gets $1,000 a month in their pension or whatever it is, their government handout, whatever you want to call it. So they can either get $500 back, which is a default, or they'll pay you the full $1,000, but it'll only buy what $500 used to buy, which is also it's a default. Inflation is a default, okay? It's a stealth, super regressive default. And people who are highly leveraged and have huge asset positions, guys, the guys you see on CNBC every day and Bloomberg, you know, the guys that are meeting now over in Saudi Arabia, you know, talking about socialism in front of a king, you know, those are the guys that benefit the most. And I have a number of posts, including a quite long thread, all of quotes, contemporary quotes from the Weimar and the Austrian hyperinflation back in the 20s, the 1920s. And in every single case, the only people that make out good really in are the rich capitalists in the city, as the words of the time did it. Also, some others like the farmers who could, you know, charge whatever, but the vast majority of the population is destroyed. And what and the point of all these posts is that it was the demoralization, the destruction of society that a massive inflation engenders, that led directly to the rise of Hitler. Okay. And so I do not think, I mean, there's everything so connected, but I don't think without the hyperinflation, I don't think you would have got Hitler. His push, his failed push, was in 1923. So there's, if you read the contemporary accounts, that's what led to Hitler. Time out, I have quote after quote after quote from people who lived through it. So that's another warning. I said years ago, why do I, you know, people, why do you bash the Fed so much? And I go, I bash them because they are driving people to extremism with their wealth inequality exploding policies. And when you cut rates to artificially low levels, it's rocket fuel for the hyenas of the economy, as Thomas Mann said, the ones who will first advantage, they can borrow at 0.75% as they did during COVID, from, you know, all these Fed programs, and they will buy up all the assets. And as Jeremy Grantham said years ago, overpriced assets are one of the worst things that can happen for young people in a society. And I'm with the young people in the society on that. They're not the ones that screwed everything up. They're the ones that are going to have to clean up for it. And a metaphor I use is this generation, of which I'm on the tail end, has. It's like a grandparents taking their whole family and grandkids to dinner one night at a fancy dinner, and then they just skip out on the bill. And I think that's what the Democrats and the Republicans have done. I think that's what Trump is doing. I think that's what Biden did. So, and I hope to be wrong. I always hope to be wrong, but I don't think I will be, you know. And the end game is inflation. I mean, frankly, if I, you know, I feel like I've got my finger in the dike, and I'm just trying to say, why are we doing this again? But you know, I also say history doesn't rhyme, it repeats exactly.
Well, I mean, to your point about exactly what you're saying with the, let's say, the rise of Hitler, It was interesting. I'm actually in Italy right now, and we drove down here from Munich, and we're talking about the destruction, or the demolition, sorry, of the cooling towers of at least two of Germany's nuclear power plants. And we started kind of discussing this idea and thinking, as you destroy the a society's ability to have access to energy, you're literally destroying that society. And I said, this is part of the road to very nationalist and populist leaders like that, because people just get so sick and tired, and that pendulum ends up swinging back, and people want to go back to a time where their country had the ability to have lights that turn on, have energy that doesn't cost them an absolute arm and a leg, have manufacturing jobs like Germany used to have. And there's so many of these destructive policies that, frankly, it just doesn't make any sense until you look at it through the lens of very deliberate destruction.
Yeah, look at the Club of Rome. You know, they explicitly are, want population declines, and they're getting it demographically just from, the birth patterns. But I mean, there's a guy. I have a video of him on. He's one of these World Economic Forum Club of Rome types, and he's saying, we're at 7 billion population now. We need to get down to about 1 billion, and he's very matter of fact about it. And frankly, I don't think he cares whether they do it through some sort of lab virus or war or whatever, And I absolutely, used to think, oh, nobody wants this, right? No, there are people who do want it. There's a guy, there's another science panel I sent the video out of years ago of they're sitting around talking about how to make people genetically smaller than cats because then we would use less resources. These people are not joking. And the guy goes, let's say we don't want people to eat beef. He goes, there's a tick that has a virus or whatever that if you
It's
get
called
bitten by it, you
the
become
Lone
allergic
Star
to beef.
tick.
Yeah, Lone Star tick. So I could literally see these people airdropping ticks on American cities. It, because in their mind, they think they're doing God's work or something, or I don't know what it is. And it's the same thing with these climate people. It's almost like they want to go back to a lifestyle of back in the 1500s, and where they're burning wood and something, burning wood. There's a great C.S. Lewis quote. He says, "Of all the tyrannies, a tyranny sincerely exercised for the good of its victims may be the most oppressive. Those who torment us for our own good will torment us with no end, for they do so with the approval of their own conscience." So I always love that quote because they think that they are right. They're all going to end up on Snowpiercer or Elysium or wherever they have planned up. But we're just like I think a lot of the world's leaders, and I mean the people above the people, I think they look upon the mass of humanity as cockroaches or as bugs or as something to be either completely ignored or crushed, And I am getting more along the lines of this is intentional. There's people like I was talking the other day about the destruction of the American of the nuclear family, which it seems globally that's been a real goal. They want they've been pushing all sorts of nuttiness for especially the last 10 years, and of course they went insane, during the COVID period. And I think that there's people that want to destroy families. I mean, I know the I mean, I think that's kind of a communist sort of thing, so your allegiance is to the state. And I guess fascism too. They're both to me, they're just two sides of the same coin. But I noticed that too, and I think it's intentional. I think there's people that do it. I think a lot of this comes from organizations like the WEF, the NGOs, and God knows what's going. I mean, there's Europe. They've had hundreds or thousand years to be depraved. So God knows what the billionaires that have been there for centuries, what their families are involved in. And we in America seem to have our own set of completely amoral technocrats and the Bill Gateses and all these other people who for some reason they're not just happy having more money than God. They have to manipulate other people's lives. Bill Gates wants to block out the sun, he got kicked out of India for one of his viral it wasn't COVID, but it was one of his vaccines that was apparently not working out too well. I don't know, these guys, they're like, but it goes back to that C.S. Lewis quote. You know, Bill Gates thinks he thinks he's helping you, whether you want to be helped or whether you think you're being helped or not. He's damn well going to help you, you know? And whenever someone says they want to save the world or save the planet or help me, I'm kind of like, I got, you know, you should have one hand on your wallet and one hand on a gun, you know, because I don't trust these techno billionaires, you know? And if you go back to Eisenhower's farewell address, you know, not only did he warn against the military complex, but he warned against this sort of technocracy, which I think we're seeing with the Peter Thiel and that crowd. Of course, Whitney Webb is one of the best at warning about this. There's a guy named Mark Goodwin too, who's done a great work. So, yeah, be aware, be, you know, open your eyes that these people that say they want to do good for you, I'm not sure they want to do good for you.
Well, and that's the thing is, I go back to thinking about that exact situation many times, and it's like, what makes you the utmost authority and the, let's say, the decision-making figure? Who put you in charge of, who gave you this authority to say that this is the direction that we should go?
I don't know.
Rudy,
You know, it's
when
funny though, speaking of nukes, which Germany, I think that's they're just basically it's suicidal. It's so stupid. You know, ever since Three Mile Island years ago, if you even suggested nuclear power, you know, in the United States, you were like, oh, what, you know, no, you got bashed from everybody, right? Or not everybody, but a lot of the loonies would bash you. But once Microsoft and NVIDIA, you know, need power for their data centers, suddenly everybody's pro-nuke, right? And again, it just goes to that thing of like, this country seems to be run solely on the basis of what's best for Bill Gates and Bill Ackman and NVIDIA, you know? I don't think that should be our top priority necessarily.
But
You
again,
know, we
you and
got a
I
lot of
have.
infrastructure. We got a lot of problems in this country. We've got a lot of problems in this country, and there's never any money for that. And God help us if we give poor people $180 a month to feed themselves. But hey, Israel needs money. Ukraine needs money. We need to waste trillions on a lie in Iraq for a decade. You know, there's plenty of money for that. You know, and why? Because the Fed will buy up the bonds. So the Fed and war go hand in hand. Ron Paul's great quote: that there's no. No surprises, the century of total war and central banking, you know, coincided, you know. Along with the banksters who have been my primary target here on Twitter for years is the warmongers, you know, the neocons. And Trump was going to end Ukraine war on day one. Well, now we're talking, now people are talking about let's escalate it. Let's give Ukraine long-range missiles to shoot into Russia. Okay. Well, what if Russia gives Iran long-range missiles to shoot at us? You know, I mean, people know that they say, oh, it's absurd. Well, what's the difference? I don't know. I think the warmongers have done far more damage to our country than the American warmongers have done far more damage to our country than the Russians could ever hope to. And they've done more damage to the world. I mean, look how many millions we killed in the Middle East for nothing. Innocent people. You know, for every bad guy we got, we killed 1,000 innocent people. You know, is that what we're all about? You know, we do so much evil in the world. We do so much good too. As somebody said the other day, we're the most benevolent, you know, empire in history. And that, well, I don't know. That may be true. Yeah, we're not. Yeah, but on the other hand, we kill a lot of innocent people in countries that most Americans couldn't find on a map, and that kind of bugs me too. And we don't declare war anymore. It's whatever president wants to do. Obama wants to kill American citizens. That's fine. Biden wants to, you know, kill people. Fine. Trump wants to kill people. Fine. The Democratic Party in the last 10 years has morphed from traditionally anti-war to, you know, raging warmongers. You know, they were buddying up to Dick Cheney. You know, remember, just because Cheney was sort of anti-Trump at the time. It's just, you know, Trump bombs Iran and Hillary starts complimenting him on how great his foreign policy is. I mean, you know, what are we doing? What is this America? Is this what we are now? We kill people in countries that don't attack us. I mean, and we don't care about poor people or middle class people. We just care about, you know, these techno billionaires and making them richer. And God forbid they pay a dime in taxes. You know, I remember when Steve Bannon got kicked out. I think he had a proposal. at the time for like anyone making over $5 million, they had like a 40% tax rate. And of course, that he was gone like the next day. So another third rail. There's several. I don't know. I just wish this country was actually America first. I wish Trump was America first. I don't feel like he is. People say, "Oh, what do you want, Kamala?" No, I'm glad Kamala lost, but Trump the candidate and Trump the president are two different things.
Well,
So,
this is exactly, you brought this up, and this is exactly where I wanted to go is what do you think would, let's say, constitute a failed Trump presidency? Because he ran on this idea of peace on day one, and here we are, let's call it 200 days in, whatever the actual number is, and we haven't made much progress on any of those fronts. If anything, we've had a lot more conflict. We have bigger deficit spending. So, a lot of these promises, and I mean, it's not surprising because of the, let's say, the typical path of politicians, but what do you think for big supporters of Trump will constitute a failed presidency for him?
Well, there are some smart guys who are very who have some faith in his whole tariff, redesigning the world plan, and I hope that in 4 years or 3 years, whatever it is, that I can look back and say, "Wow, I was really wrong about Trump. He really does care about America, and we are doing so much better now." I hope to be able to say that. Past history has it doesn't make me optimistic. We do not have 50,000 immigrants pouring in the border every week or whatever it was before. Totally unvetted, I mean, I've said before, thank God we live next to Mexico and not next to Saudi Arabia, right? So because the most Mexican people I know are great people. But go after the Venezuelan gangbangers and everything, but they're raiding meat packing plants and kicking out people that have been here 25 years. I know there's a lot of, I don't know. I mean, I'm a human being. I have a little sympathy for somebody. If I was in Mexico and I could get over here, I'd try to do it too. And if you're here 20 years and 30 years and you got a business, you got a family, and you haven't committed any crimes, I would think there would be some process where they go, you know what, we'll grandfather you in as a good citizen because they are good citizens, and throw out the criminals. There's plenty of Mexican criminals here. There's plenty of white criminals here too, black criminals, and Asian criminals. So I'm all for throwing out the criminals. I'm not enthusiastic about going after the family guy who's been here 20 years. Did he break the law? Yes, he did. And my father was an immigrant and American citizen, legal immigrant, and believe me, there's no one more anti-illegal immigration than a legal immigrant, and I understand that. So that part has been good. Looks like the Mideast peace treaty is kind of in tatters already. The Ukrainian war, if anything, we've gotten more belligerent. Let's kick sand constantly in the face of the one nation on earth that could probably completely wipe us out in 15 minutes. What else? Israel seems to be the number one priority for everyone in the Trump administration. For him to backtrack, not just backtrack, but completely flip-flop and do a 180 on the Epstein thing is sh but it's
What list?
shocking. It's a hoax. It's a big hoax. It for him to say that is spitting, first of all, spitting in the face of hundreds and hundreds of victims. It's not a hoax. It's an actual thing. There were a lot of rich and famous people, powerful people that were very close with Jeff Epstein. And I believe Jeff Epstein was primarily a financial money launderer type criminal who also was into blackmailing people sexually. And he even did some arms trafficking, if you dig deeper into the story, too, with one of the Khashoggis, you may remember him. One of his relatives was cut up in a Saudi consulate. What is he covering up? Now, I have heard, first of all, Trump was, just to go off on this tangent, Trump was, by his own admission, hanging out with Jeff Epstein for at least 15 years. And they weren't just hanging out, they were partying. They liked the same thing. They liked young women. Now, how young is debatable, but there is absolutely no way that Donald Trump hung out with Jeff Epstein for 15 years and did not know that Jeff Epstein was into 12-year-olds. Now, did Trump do anything illegal? We probably will never know. I don't have any video. Epstein may, but he's dead. But we do know what one thing we do absolutely know is that Trump had no problem with guys doing that. I mean, he was hanging out with John Casablancas, and he's hanging out with Epstein. You know, there are many accounts of that. And people, I get a lot of people who are completely ignorant of the case. You know, I was my first tweet on this was 2014, before I even heard of Whitney Webb. And you know, it's without a doubt. I said years ago, this is the biggest conspiracy since 1963. I mean, this is so obvious that this guy was involved with, you know, the prime minister of Israel, Ehud Barak, also minister of defense. He was hanging out with notorious, people all over. You know, just the worst of the worst. You know, and the richest and the most prestigious people in the world. He was hanging out with princes, and not just Prince Andrew, but Saudi princes and all sorts of European princes. So, I think what it was, and so the question is, let's assume that Trump didn't do anything illegal with Epstein. Okay, that, for me, that's kind of a jump, but let's just grant that. And some of the girls have said, you know, they didn't see Trump do anything, so fine. Let's assume Trump was aware of it and didn't care. You know, that's his thing. I don't care. Remember, Trump's mentor was Roy Cohn, who was a blackmailer in the extreme back in the, you know, what, the 50s, the McCarthy era. And that was just that he learned a lot, I bet, from that. And I've said sometimes before, I wonder if Trump is more of a blackmailer than a blackmailee, you know. But for him to suddenly do a flip-flop, assuming he's not personally involved, what is he covering up? Because he definitely is covering up something. And it's got to be so huge. I mean, if it was just, you know, well, frankly, Bill Clinton was up to his eyeballs for sure with Epstein, and Trump hasn't gone after that. I wonder why. And the reason I think why, the conclusion I have come to after a dozen years of looking at this, is I believe, and there's plenty of evidence for this, I believe that Epstein was a Mossad operative. Okay, so, and I think the CIA had to know about it, whether or not they were actively participating in it or not. They had to. It was so obvious. I mean, people knew about it 10 years ago. It was obvious, or more. So I think it has foreign policy implications. I think if the truth came out, we would learn that the CIA and the Mossad were using underage prostitutes or underage girls to entrap rich, powerful men to control them. They don't want to punish them; they want to control them. And I think most Americans still love their kids, and I think hopefully that would. People would stop saying, "Is the guy a Republican or a Democrat?" They would say, "What? You guys are operating and you're using underage girls to try and entrap politicians as part of a." And plus, I mean, that's not even talking about the money laundering that was going on and that kind of financial crimes. I think that there would be such an uproar that we might have to cut ties with some countries, or we might have to maybe have another church committee on the CIA. You know, what the hell are you guys doing? And that's why I think he's covering it up, and everybody in his administration is. And I don't know how a guy like, you know, well, I do know they don't have any principles. But guys like Bongino and Patel, you know, they were hardcore for the years. They would bring out the list. You know, we got to get the. You know, they saw what I saw, and then suddenly they flip flop like this. I have to think that it's a foreign policy decision, and an intelligence, protect intelligence decision. You know, you belong to intelligence, right? So this was, I think it's just sort of that there's people in the CIA that do tremendously good work around the world, and they're very brave and they risk their lives. And then I think there is a segment of the CIA, it's very compartmentalized, that does really, really evil things. There was a guy, Bustamante, who's actually on TV now. He's on various shows and stuff, former CIA operative. And he did an AMA some years back, a few years back on Reddit. And he's, you know, I'm an ex-CIA guy, ask me anything. And they verified him somehow. And he said, one of the questions was, does the CIA use underage prostitutes to entrap people? And his answer was, oh my God, the things we do to control sources or to control people is so awful. I don't want to even answer that. And what does that say? Somebody made a comment like, oh my God, that's a scary answer. And someone else said, you know what? He makes it sound like there's worse things they do than that. You know? So what is being done in our name? You know? Not, you know, to get beyond the Epstein case, what's being done in the Mideast East and around the world in our name? You know, there's that great new Fort Bragg book out, the murder investigation. I forget the name. I think it's the guy who wrote it was named Seth Harp, and he talks about how the special forces, a lot of these guys are heavily involved in heavy drugs, drug trafficking, murder. Listen to a couple podcasts on it. I have the book. What are we doing? It's this empire is leading to all sorts of just horrific corruption. We're 20 years in Afghanistan. We take it from the Taliban, then we hand it back to them. What was that about? Heroin production was at all-time highs when we were there. Then the Taliban came in and most tried to shut it down mostly. And then you got the fentanyl problem. So, and this guy, Mark Goodwin, I was listening to a podcast with him the other day. He's a close friend of Whitney Webb. And he says, we're blowing up fishing boats in Venezuela, but you know what? Our government has been involved in drug trafficking for decades. I mean, it's kind of a thing ever since World War II. So I don't know. I don't know what I think. I'm just expanding this whole thing into what is going on in our name, what is being done in our name. Every time I read about, we drop a bomb on a wedding party or something, I'm like, really? And then you wonder why people, some people don't like America, It's not the America that I think we could be. I love America. I'm glad I'm here. I'm very lucky to be here, and it's been very good to me. And but our foreign policy is just demonic, frankly, a lot of the time. I don't get it, and I never have. And of course, that turns a lot of people off. The thing with me is you never really know where I'm. I mean, I'm not a team D or team R. I'm just team America, and that's my focus is what's best for America. What's best for the average Americans? I much care more about some people struggling in Ohio that I've never met that don't look like me than I am about something going on in Ukraine, But that makes, I don't know what that makes me. I'm not a pacifist, but I just don't like killing innocent people all the time.
Well, I thought about that, let's say the Epstein situation as you're explaining it. I thought about that before, just from an incentives perspective, which I try to often do when I'm, discussing these types of very opaque situations that we don't have a good way to kind of grasp. And if you had a group of people that wielded power and you were all compromised to be able to get into that group to begin with, you wouldn't let anybody else in that group that wasn't compromised to the same level that you were. And so I think it makes sense to need to or want to hide if that is the case. I'm not saying it is the case, but if you sit back and look at it from that perspective, it makes a hell of a lot more sense that you wouldn't let anybody else in there that you didn't have dirt on so that you could manipulate them to get the outcome that you want, right? And to protect your interests.
Yeah, it's a big club. I use that phrase a lot. You're generally talking about the rich guys, but it can also apply to the more nefarious, creepy stuff that we're talking about now. Yeah, I mean, isn't that like Skull and Bones? Which I think John Kerry and George H.W. Bush were both in, or was George Bush in it too? I don't know. There's all sorts of these societies that go back, and there's some great books I've been reading over the years that kind of, you want to think these things aren't real and don't exist, but reality is a little bit scarier than we want it to be. And that's why a lot of people wave these things off. They don't want to think about it, because if you do the real research and you kind of realize at least the shadows of what's going on, it can be very discouraging, and because you want to believe that you don't want to believe people do stuff like that, powerful people. And then you realize, yeah, they do. And it's discouraging, but you have to have, I'm not discouraged. I mean, I keep fighting, and I'm quite happy. I love to joke around, and I've been very fortunate in my private life. And I see hope for the world, and I want hope for the world. I want everybody to do good, and and then there's a lot of people, I think there's a lot of people, like we were talking earlier, that some of these environmentalists, I think they really want the world to end. They just want it to end. They whether it's an earthquake or a global warming or a tsunami or what, an asteroid, they just don't like life. They don't like kids. That's a big thing now. I see so many people walking around with strollers. If I see a stroller, I get out of the way. I walk in the street or when I don't want to interrupt, and then the stroller goes by and there's some, they got two little dogs sitting in it or something. I'm like, these are kids. It should be having kids, right? And I look at that and I just shake my head and go, wow, what are you doing? And There's a lot of people think like that, though. You know, there's a lot of anti children. You know, a lot of, and then of course there's a lot of bad parents too, which is sad. But we don't prioritize in our country. I mean, the Republican Party, for example, talks about families a lot, and the Democrats talk about working people and stuff. But I don't think either party really cares at all about your average working person or your average mother or your average father. It seems, if anything, they're trying to destroy them or mock them. I mean, look at the Biden administration. You know, they just seem to want to mock families, you know, what we used to call normal families. You know, a mom and a dad and some kids. You know, God forbid you say that now. It's like, oh, why are you so hateful? I'm like, what do you mean hateful? This is proud, you know, loving, you know. It's like, you know, the guys that, you know, want to dress up as nuns and dance around. I mean, God bless them, but you know, I don't think that's something that should be promoted. You know, look at the, you know, I think Joe Biden was behind a lot of that weird stuff. So again, I'm not, you know, I criticize Trump, but I have a lot of Trump fans that follow me, and I have a lot of friends that are very pro Trump, and if I criticize Trump, which I do when he deserves it, I think, and it certainly doesn't mean I wish Kamala was president, or that I think Joe Biden. You know, if anyone's paid any attention to me over the years, I am bipartisan on calling people out if I think they're doing something wrong, and I always punch up. I don't pick, you know. I mean, I'm picking on people way more powerful and wealthy than me, and so. But you know, some people, it's like you have to be 100%, whether it's Dems or Republicans, you have to be 100% on board. And I'm not. And that kind of, some people, they just go, oh, Rudy's being, you know, weird again. That's okay. They just shrug it off. Other people get mad and leave. But you know, it's absolutely, you know, I think most people, if they listen to me for a while, get me. You know, I sincerely do care about people, you know, and being an American, I care primarily about other Americans, and I don't think our leaders do, frankly, very often.
So, Rudy, we've talked a lot about, you know, the negative side of things, the problems that we're facing. What do you see as possible solutions at this point? You know, this is something that I want to focus on more going forward. You know,
Sure.
you have this perspective. We've gone through the negatives, the inflation, the, you know, let's say the inability to control wars, things like that. What do you see as, for the average person that you're focused on, as the solution?
Well, it has to be bottom up. You know, you got to start with your own family. You know, there's a guy on Twitter who has a great quote. You know, he says, for 99.99% of people on Earth, your only legacy is going to be your children. So that should be your top priority at all times. Ted Oakley is a guy who manages money for a businessman when they sell their businesses, small business guys. And, you know, they may have a couple $100 million or something. I don't know. Have you ever interviewed him, Ted Oakley?
Yeah, I've interviewed him a couple times.
Yeah. And so, but he has comments like, you know, he knows he meets a lot of older, you know, rich guys who ran a business for 40 years and now they've got $200 million or something. And he invests for them. But he says, you know, a lot of them are not happy. They're not happy with their wives. They're not happy. Their kids aren't talking to them, or their kids, they have no relationship with their kids because they were working so hard all those years, you know. And nobody lays on their deathbed and says, I wish I would have made more money trading options, you know. Or building widgets, you know. At some point you got to decide what's most important. And that's why I don't get the people that just need more and more and more and more and more. I mean, you know, you give me a bit, I don't know. I mean, maybe it's, I just, you get so many people. You get, like, you know, Roger Altman, you know, who's been in government and been at the trough from Wall Street for decades, and they'll still have him come on CNBC and opine and gives his opinion on stuff. It's like, this guy, you know, this guy worked on the Chrysler bailout years ago for the government and then went to work for Chrysler. You know, so I don't know. Some of these guys can't just retire with their money and be happy. Spend more time with their family. So I'd say that's number one. I think you got to try and elect people locally that, you know, a lot of people say, oh, voting's not going to work. So, and I can sympathize with that point of view, but you can start bottom up, try and get them into the legislature, state legislature. I mean, look how far California has fallen. You know, I can't believe these guys keep getting voted in, but they do. So a lot of times people get what they deserve. So, you know, try and elect people that are going to make a difference on a local level. Try and make a difference in your community. You can volunteer. I mean, we have food banks around here that are full. I mean, hundreds and hundreds, they've doubled or tripled in the last 5 years of the number of people coming in. This is not a poor area. It's a middle, definitely upper middle class area. These are people with jobs, with houses that are coming to get food. Work on that. Work at your churches. I think we talked the other day with a guy about there's a big hole in America's society because they got away from religion 60 years ago, and they got into everything else, drugs and cults and avarice and all the other things that can replace religion. And assuming your religion isn't apocalyptic, as far as killing other people or something, I think that's a good thing. And other people, maybe just coach Little League or something like that. If you're not, there's all different ways you can help. That's it. I mean, from a, if I was dictator, I told you the first two things I would do would be to end too big to jail and end too big to fail. I think that would be huge. I think a lot of people, they see that if you're above a certain level, you just get away with stuff, and I think that bothers people because they play by the rules. Why don't you have to play by the rule, Yeah, so that's, I mean, there's not much that an individual can do other than try and improve his own life. From a business standpoint, try and improve your earning power. If you're a kid and you can't afford college, go become a plumber, be an apprenticeship somewhere, become an electrician, become something like that that's going to be very useful in the future. And people like me will have to pay you money to fix things because you have that aptitude, and I never took the time to learn it, although I have some kids that certainly can do that kind of stuff. But I mean, yeah, I mean, that's it. Just take care of your family first. If you don't have a family, maybe make your family your friends or your neighbors, and try and help them. Be an example. Try to avoid all cable news. Try and avoid all hyper partisanship. You may decide that the Democrats agree with you more than the Republicans do. Fine, but don't demonize all Republicans and vice versa. There's a lot of Republicans, like you were saying, that I think are pretty shocked at some of the things that have been going on in the Trump administration. They didn't expect it. So it's not a monolithic block. Just like, the black community is not a monolithic block, and the white community is not a monolithic block. There's people in there. I really hate how we demonize people who don't agree with us on every single issue. I have great friends, on all sides, who I disagree with them maybe on half of things, and the other half, I agree. And I'm perfectly fine arguing with you, Tom, over something, and then, hell, let's go have a beer after, and you'd be like, yeah, sure. But a lot of people can't. A lot of people, especially during COVID and stuff, they got away from that. They like once they find out that you disagree with them on one issue, oh, you're dead to them. And to me, that's, how many people split up long-term friendships because their friend supported Trump or their friend supported Biden. I mean, neither of those guys are worth losing friends over, and that's a thing we could
That's
all
a
do right now.
great point. That's a great way to say that.
Right. And sometimes I find myself guilty of it. Like someone will send me some hyperpartisan thing on Twitter, and I'll be like, I would just screw you and block them or mute them. But other times I've had people come at me, and I'll go, well, what about this? Or I'll actually try. And on several times, there ends up being a little bit of a back and forth because people are so used to being immediately blocked or immediately muted or something like that. And for someone to actually respond and say, hey, what about this? I've actually had some people, we kind of come to a sort of a common ground thing, which I think is very important. Other people, they just don't. They're just like the guys years ago that would go to a bar just to pick a fight. There's guy, I get people that just want to pick a fight, and I don't have time for that. So I just kind of say, okay, well, have a nice day.
Well, Rudy, I think that's part and parcel to a lot of the online interaction that we now are so used to, right? I actually wrote about this last week on my Substack. And so a quote that I remember a long time ago after listening to a hardcore history podcast was by Robert E. Howard. It says, "Civilized men are often more discourteous than savages because they know that they can be impolite without having their skulls split as a general thing."
Yeah, that's a good one.
Right. And it's just if you have the ability to bitch at somebody and just tell them they're wrong and tell them to FO and you're right no matter what, that's super easy to do from behind a keyboard. We don't have that feedback mechanism anymore from, this in-face interaction or in-person interaction. And it is, I remember actually, I recently watched a podcast between Dave Smith and Nick Fuentes, and think whatever you want about those two personalities. The point was, is their discussion, it was a 3-hour discussion on which or through which they disagreed about a lot of different points. And the entire discussion was civil. They never got heated. It was a masterclass in discussing ideas and disagreeing civilly and coming to a common ground. And as difficult as that can feel for a lot of people because they feel personally attacked or whatever it is, that's something that I think as a society we really need to get over to be able to just at least try and look at some of these things from somebody else's perspective and not just necessarily write them off completely and say they're a complete idiot, and just taking the time to listen to somebody else and maybe consider a different point of view would be so helpful.
Oh, completely agree. And I try to do that in my personal life, especially. I mean, I very even in, for years and years, I was all I could always talk to. I had a skill of just being able to talk to people and not get into screaming matches with someone that I may basically just completely disagree with. And I tried to, and I've talked some pretty controversial issues with people face to face, where we end up diametrically opposed, Could have gone into a screaming match and yet I kind of guided it towards where we dealt a little back and forth until we kind of come to it. Either an impasse, but a friendly impasse, or common ground, which I like to use the example of Dennis Kucinich and Ron Paul, who are very different politically and were worked together on a number of things when they were in Congress together. We need more people like those guys, left and right, whatever those terms mean nowadays. They were sincere, they're principled. I mean, Ron Paul, my God, he's the only one I say who's been right on our foreign policy and on our monetary policy for 40 years. And of course, the GOP hated him, more than the Democrats did. And Kucinich, he speaks up for freedom of speech and anti-war, that's so rare nowadays. I mean, free speech is almost like a controversial opinion, which to me is shocking because free speech is the number one, civil right that you should have. But yeah, I try, I can't claim to be perfect on it online. You're right, it's much more impersonal. But I do try, if someone comes at me now, and I know that they don't want to have an argument, they just want to yell at me. I'm perfectly happy just not replying and probably muting them, which is fine. Let them scream into the void. And I have a lot, I follow people that I mostly probably disagree with, and I have people that follow me. I think they probably mostly disagree with me, and that's fine. Let's agree on the stuff we agree on. I mean, for me, it's war and it's the financial system, and those are my top two priorities from what I'm working on. I mean, I have other priorities, and other people may have two different priorities that are more important to them, and that's okay. That's good. Everybody work towards what they want, but we're all Americans. That's why I particularly didn't like, dark Biden talking about, the evil Republicans, and I don't like Trump just demonizing people that disagree with him. I think we need to realize that we're all Americans, we're all in this together, some more than others, and just try and be civil to people even when they disagree with you. You'll find sometimes that people are shocked, if you're actually if they come at you with something hateful and then you reply, sometimes I'll just reply, God bless you, to somebody who just is, screaming at me about something, and then I just move on. I don't need to dwell on it. I get hundreds and hundreds of replies every day. I engage a lot with people over the years, and I think a lot of people like that because, a lot of the accounts don't ever reply to people, or they mute them or whatever. But and sometimes I can't get to everything. So if I'm ignoring you, I'm not really ignoring you. I just, I have like ADHD. I'm reading stuff constantly. I'm watching stuff. I'm trying to think of something funny to post. I just it's there's a lot going on in my brain. I'm trying to keep it active so I don't get dementia. So it's believe me, it's active. Whether it's productive is another story.
So, Rudy, when we think about, again, going back to this idea of solutions, do you think that a higher gold price going forward actually ends up benefiting a lot of the the big geopolitical players that are either have a lot of gold or are buying more gold right now. Is this, in a way, a higher gold price could potentially help mediate a lot of the conflict or some of the conflict and help a lot of these countries that are that have a lot of it?
Well, I mean, I think of Jim Grant's old quip that gold is the reciprocal of the world's faith in central bankers, and so clearly, I think people are becoming a little bit unmoored from the idea that central bankers are omnipotent as they look at the numbers. I've been on record saying I'd rather have gold be, $500 an ounce and have us actually deal with our problems. Then have it be. I certainly don't. David Einhorn has a quote where he said, this is when gold was like 2,500 or 2,000. And he said, would I be happy if gold went to $4,000 and I doubled my money? He goes, yeah. He goes, yeah, I'd be happy. He goes, I don't know if I'd be happy if it went to 40,000, And that's the kind of feeling I have. I don't want to see. I mean, there's books out now and there's all these people to, these Civil War people and the collapse of society and the, everything's going to go, I don't want to see that, And people say, well, it's going to happen. I don't know, man. Americans are pretty resilient. We tend to, we pull together, all these, there were all guys writing after the 2020 election, that, oh, society's going to dissolve and there's going to be a civil war and the army's going to turn on itself. And, a guy, goofballs like Noah Smith was tweeting this stuff out. And no, I mean, if you notice any natural disaster, like a massive hurricane or something like that, what do people do? You got the black people and the white people working together. You got poor people and middle-class people working together. They're not waiting for the government to come save them. They get together. People get nicer in bad situations a lot of time. And I think there's a lot of people, just like I said, a lot of people are rooting for an asteroid. I think there's a lot of people rooting for Mad Max because they have this big ammo collection or something. They think everything's going to be bitching, and I don't think like that. It's not going to be bitching, Mad Max is not fun, and so let's not hope for that. I think a lot of people hope for that. Just like a lot of people hope for, climate change will kill off, 5 billion of the population so they can have their nice little, San Francisco be a lot nicer than when all the poor people are dead. Something like that. I just, I'm, I don't, anyway, that's, sorry. I'd answer your question about gold. A higher gold price is an indication that, this current experiment in fiat, which is what only, what is it? 54 years old in the US, I mean, and it is failing. And it always, it's all, the end game's always going to be the same. It's, whether it's in 5 years or 50 years, I mean, if you look at the history of the dollar since 1913, the purchasing power has lost like 99% of the value. A dollar today is not like a dollar in 1913, which could buy you real stuff. So, does how much gold does the, I mean, the does the Fed own any gold? I don't think so. It's all treasury gold, right? So, we own some gold. We should be buying gold. Instead, they're talking about selling gold to buy Bitcoin, which to me just again my. That I'm too old school to even I mean to me that's not even funny, but they have all sorts of games they want to play, as we were talking before earlier about st with stable coins. I don't know what they're gonna do there. Gold, do I want gold? Gold to me is money. It's not an investment. It's not something I plan on selling. It's already gone up 10 times since I got into it. It's insurance for me. I don't, I trade gold stocks, but I don't trade the physical gold, is it a good thing if it's going up? I don't know. I guess, China owns a boatload of it, right? So I guess it's good for China and they're encouraging their people to buy gold. Whereas I think your average American, other than a necklace or something, they don't own any gold, there's some smart, rich people buying a lot of gold. I think it's not a bad idea. Everybody should own some. Am I happy if it goes to 10,000 or 50,000? Probably not, because that would indicate that the collapse, the fiat system is coming, and everybody thinks it's going to be, a lot of people on our side, that are our side being the, the gold fans or the Bitcoin fans who are cheering for the end of everything, and because they think they're going to be wealthy. You're super wealthy. Well, if you're super wealthy and there's Mad Max on the streets, what good is it? You're gonna be worried about canned food more, I think, at that point. So I don't wish for that. I don't think it's gonna happen. I think Americans will pull together. I hope we don't get to a point where we elect someone who makes Trump look like a a shy guy. We could go either to look at what's going on in New York City right now. You got a left-wing guy there. We could go the other way too. The guy I was talking to the other day was saying how his friends in their 30s or whatever are all becoming much more right-wing. People are listening to people like Curtis Yarvin, now. And it's a little concerning. I don't like a monarchy. I don't want Peter Thiel being my dictator, So we have a lot of problems ahead of us, but you know what? I lived through the 70s. There was a lot of problems in the 70s and the 60s. There was political assassinations, there was war, there was riots in the streets, there was all sorts of inflation. There was a lot of reason to be down on America, and we came out of that. And although it's been really rough for the middle class over the last 50 years, we did survive that, and I think we'll survive this too, this period now. People say this is the most divided we've ever been. I'm like, no, this is not. We had an actual civil war that was pretty divisive. The 70s, if anything, I think may have been just as bad or worse than the period now. So everybody seems to think that their time on Earth is like the most important and eventful thing in history. And read history. That's what I tell people. Don't read economics books. Read history books. You'll learn a lot more. Economics is kind of useless, or it's dangerous, as far as I'm concerned. Pseudoscience. But yeah, I don't really look at gold the same way I look at shares of Exxon or something. Not it's a completely different animal to me. I'm unusual. I'm an old school guy. Is it good that it goes to four? That it's at 4,000 instead of 2,000? I don't know. I mean, it's good. There's always winners and losers. Right, so it's bad for the people that in America, probably the 90% that own no gold and have seen their cost of living skyrocket. So that's generally who I'm fighting for. So yeah, I would say it's not a great thing, even though it benefits me personally.
So, exactly for that, the average person, Rudy, what do you think are some skills that they should understand, again, going forward in this time?
Well, they should, again, going back to history, they should look at the last 25 years. We had 250% drops in the major indices in the last 25 years. Now, I know that that is considered impossible now because the Fed would come in and save the day, but maybe they can't. Maybe they have other priorities than saving the stock market next time, like saving the dollar or saving the treasury. I don't know. Maybe they do, come in. They seem to have, anytime there's a hint of, when we're down 3%, they start talking about, taking measures. Go back and look at the top stocks by market cap in 2000 and in 2007. And then look where they are today. Some have been home runs, but there's a lot of zeros in there too. I was noticing today, look at Fiserv. There's FI is the symbol. I have no position, never had a position, but that thing is down from 240 to 74 in what, about 6 months. That chart is a chart you saw an awful lot back in 2001. If you look at Fiserv, it's just as one example of what could happen. Everybody's in the same stocks. Everybody's levered up to the margin as much as they can. And of course, if you're hedge fund and stuff, you can margin way more than 50%. You know what I mean? You're levered to the gills in ways that I can't even comprehend. And what's the one thing that always blows people up? Always, whether it's people or companies or governments, it's leverage, it's debt. So be careful. Everyone's in the same things. If everybody tries to hit the door one day for whatever reason, it's going to be crowded. You may be 50 points between between trades, especially if Mike Green's passive selling scenario ever comes to pass. You could have big air pockets in some of these of the biggest, quote, safest stocks for no other reason than just, mechanics of how the markets work nowadays. They're price insensitive indices, investing. And that's the thing, you put money in an S&P 500 index fund and it's going to put what? It's going to put 10 cents or 5 cents in if you, for every dollar in Nvidia. So it doesn't matter whether Nvidia is selling at 50 times earnings or 5,000 times earnings, they're going to buy. And the same would go on if they ever sell. I think that during early 2020, we had a rather small, very small amount of index selling that, and the indexes were down 35% or so at the peak to trough. So just be prepared for that. Always, I always make the quote mistake of having too much cash, because and I'm not the, because I'm not going for home runs. I'm going for singles and doubles and hopefully a triple once in a while, and I get an occasional home run. But I think everybody now is going for home runs, and every day to look at Nvidia, it's up another 4%. It's up another, and this has been going on forever. I mean, Nvidia's up how much just in the last 5 years? I mean, isn't it up? Let's see. I was just looking at that today. It's just amazing. Now I know there's been the growth and the AI craze, John. It's so reminiscent of the dot-com craze, only it's got like three or six more zeros after it. So we're at 207, beginning at 23, we're around $15. So, on Nvidia. Now maybe it's well deserved, and God, the best thing that can ha ever happen for one of your stocks is for me to say it's overpriced, because then it'll like triple from there. But that's true. But I mean, we've had some incredible, just in the last 2, 3 years, spikes. And it reminds me of 1999, when the NASDAQ, which had been going up for years, went up like 80% in, 6 months, at the end of 99. And then it fell like 90% over the next few years. I think that sort of thing can happen. And a lot of people just don't want to think that, because it's too horrible to think, because they won't, people don't sell at the top. It drops 10%, and the Fed does something, and they'll buy more, and then it'll drop. I mean, a real bear market, like a 01 to 03, 2000 to 2003, is grueling. The 08, 09 is nothing compared to the pain of a multi-year bear market. And of course, March 2020 was a blip. I always joke about, a halftime report on CNBC. I'm like, what, can you imagine this group if there was an actual bear market for like 2 or 3 years, like 01 to 03, just boom, boom, boom. It would be just total comedy, because they don't know any better. And most people, there's a lot of investors now swinging for home runs that they don't even remember 2008 or 9. And maybe 2020 was just kind of a blip to them too. But I've seen, I vaguely remember 73, 74. I wasn't in the market then, but I certainly remember the dot-com and the 08, 09. And the other interesting thing to keep in mind is that they were cutting rates all through the 50% index decline in 01 to 03 and in 08, 09. They were cutting all the way down, and it didn't stop the bleeding until, I don't know what really was the catalyst in 03. I forget, but in 09, it was the accounting change. Hey, we'll just pretend, you don't have to mark to market anymore. And of course, nobody, for the whole private equity thing, which has exploded now, private credit, there's no mark to market there, of course. So we'll see how it ends up. I mean, I hope, I benefit from stock markets going up, but I've also sat through a couple of very grueling bear markets. And I think a lot of people in the market now may not have that experience. So at least kind of get an idea of what you might be facing. So there you go. I never make, I'm never the guy that's buying Nvidia at 15 and it goes to 207, but I'm also never the guy that loses 90% or more of in the stock market either. So there's pros and cons to my style, which is I don't trade very often. And I have a keen sense of market history, even if it's supposedly been repealed.
Well, that's probably why you don't necessarily want to be trading very often.
No. If I could go back 40 years, I would just save my money, and then once every year, 2 years, 3 years, when the market tanks and people hate stocks and they wish they didn't own them and they're nauseous, that's when you buy. And it's so hard to do that. And I generally, when I do it, I start small, and then usually it goes down. I'll buy a little more, and then you kind of timidly get in. But that's been my, the biggest home runs are when you buy for selling, in my style, in my opinion. And then, but you have to have patience. There's whole days, I'm looking at the market, and I say that, tweeting keeps you from overtrading, or writing Substack keeps you from overtrading. But I don't trade very much. I'll trade when I see something that I think is solvent and viable and not going out of business, and a good company that is just for whatever reason at that moment particularly hated. And that's when I'll buy. Now, selling is much harder in my experience, at least for me it is. I always tend to get out too early, And so I give up the last, 10, 20% of often, sometimes more, and but for every time I miss out on I sell and then the stock doubles, there's a time where I sell and then the stock goes down, 50%. So, it's a, you only need a few home runs to make up for a few losers. Kind of like craps, where I would play craps. I'd be there for a week or something playing craps every day, and I'd lose, 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 and then I'd have one roll with, or someone would roll, and it'd be there 15 minutes, 20 minutes, and I'd make back everything I'd lost, and then double. And it's kind of like that with the stock market. You can, you keep your losses small. This is just classic advice, and you try to let your gains run. It is hard to let your gains run. I say the only people that bought Amazon at, $2, 30 years ago and still own it are people that have been in comas, because you had to endure some 90% drops over, especially in the earlier years. And most people can't do that. And most people buy at tops and they sell at bottoms. I mean, I've seen it among friends in 08, 09, and in 01, 03. So no, not everyone could be a genius like Jim Cramer.
Well, isn't there an inverse Kramer ETF that tracks what he's
Hey,
doing and it's actually doing better than he is?
I've seen a couple posts on that. Yeah, I don't know. Does that really exist? Or is that just like someone privately doing a keeping track? Inverse. Yeah, well, there's inverse everything. I've typed in inverse. Oh yeah. Yeah. There's all these three times inverse things. No, I've heard about that. Yeah, Cramer's notorious. Like in March 2000, he or late February 2000, he had an article called "The Winners of the New World," and where he was just very confident and smug about these are the 10 stocks you need to own for the next, forever. And I think you would have lost like 95% of your money if you would have bought those stocks. Of course, we forget that. There's many other, Cramer is very good at picking absolute tops at major inflection points over the years. I've seen it. He did it during 08. He did it, definitely did it during .com. Right at the bottom of Berkshire Hathaway, I think in 99 or 2000, Cramer was just like, Buffett doesn't know anything. He doesn't understand tech. He doesn't understand. And that was like literally the peak of tech and the bottom for Berkshire Hathaway. So I never forgot that. So there's, yeah, I just like to make fun of him. Plus, if you remember, this is even more important, in 2020, he came out on TV and he basically said, look, if you don't get vaccinated, or 21, whatever, it might have been 21. If you don't get vaccinated, we need the army. You're a traitor. We need the army to go around and force everyone to be vaccinated. That's Cramer. And then Jim Bullard, who was, unfortunately, he left the Fed in the last year or two. He who was the worst person on the Fed of all of them, and that's saying something. Bullard was on TV saying that everybody needs to be tested every day, and then we would all wear little badges saying that we had passed our test. This is a Fed, some Fed guy. This is a guy who'd been at the Fed since college. All right, he left his dorm room and he went to the Fed, and here he is opining for some reason and being seriously interviewed, and he's suggesting that we all wear badges for our daily COVID tests. And that's just an example right there. Why do these people have any power over us whatsoever? Why do these goofballs, whether it's Waller or whether it's Daly, but Bostick or Powell, who are these nuts that have 14-year terms, by the way? They get to decide the price of the most, they get to fix the most important price in the world. Interest rates, money, the price of money. As Jim Grant says, the Fed has two jobs. They price fixed rates and then they try to predict the future. And they're going to do it today. And apparently they're going to cut, even though inflation, I think, is through the roof. And I think if you ask most people, they would say it's through the roof. But if you ask your talking head on CNBC, it's negligible. It's nothing. What are you worried about? Let's cut rates. Let's juice the stock market. Yay.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Rudy, is there anything that you are positive about at this point?
You mean from an investment point of view? Or just in general?
In
Yeah,
general.
the United States is a great country. We have huge assets. We got two oceans on our side. We got, you know, we I don't like what we're doing in Venezuela right now, frankly. As somebody said, that we're combining the our two of our worst policy failures, the drug war and regime change, into one thing in Venezuela. But we do have control over the Western Hemisphere for sure. And We got a lot of resources. We got a lot of good people. Maybe there's going to be good things like, maybe we get fusion technology. Maybe we figure out zero point energy, which has always been intriguing. Imagine if you could just extract infinite energy from quantum level. Now I'm of course talking way over my head now, but I mean there could be good things that happen. Like I said, I think under hard times, Americans actually tend to become nicer to other people. A lot of them, then you got the ones that want to riot and want to break windows, and they're always going to be there, but they're not the future of America. There's a lot of good kids. By kids, I mean anyone younger than me. That a lot of kids I know in the 20s and 30s are great people, way better than Trump or Biden or any of these guys. And they're working hard and they're learning and they're doing things and they're raising families. That's positive. I think we've as far as we're going to need immigration at some point, because if people aren't having kids and we got to pay all these Social Security bills, right, for the old people, of which I'm becoming one, whether I feel like it or not. You're going to need any of the immigrants, and I think we should, hey, we got Mexico. For all its the problems we get from the Mexicans coming up here, we get a million benefits. They're great, hardworking people generally. When I was, 1970s, there was no Vietnamese or Cambodians in where I am. And now I think it's the biggest population of Vietnamese and Cambodians outside of Vietnam and Cambodia. And you know what? That's been a huge net plus to America. There for every criminal, there's a dozen great people, entrepreneurs and hardworking people. And family people, and so I never was bashing the immigrants. I just bashed the uncontrolled nature of it, which I think was intentional, and I think it was largely to lower wages, frankly, and increase demand for political purposes. So anyway, as far as other good things, so yeah, I'm positive on my family, I'm positive on grandkids, positive on I love America, and that's why I criticize it from time to time when it does things that I think are really bad. And unfortunately, we have done a lot of things that are really bad in my lifetime, and but we do some good stuff too. And I'm glad China. I'm glad Putin's not dictator of the world or Z. So I'd rather be here than anywhere else in the world, honestly. And I could be probably anywhere else in the world, and I just decided to be here, even under Gavin Newsom. So there is hope. I just hope we get a leader who is a uniter and not a divider at some point, whether I agree with him on everything or not, or her. And yeah, God bless America. I'm very pro-America. I'm very happy, very cheerful. I do post things that are kind of, down, and I do criticize central banks and stuff, but I'm a very happy person and a positive person, and I want other people to be happy and positive too. And that's why I'm fighting for what I'm fighting for.
Perfect. Well, I think that's a good place to kind of wrap up for today, Rudy.
Thank you.
Of course, excellent X follow at Rudy Havenstein, and of course your Substack as well, rudy.substack.com. Rudy, thank you so much for the chat today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. I had a great time.